Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. 10 o'clock. Forgive me. 10 o'clock. And you're welcome to join the show anytime you want. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we talk about cars and car problems and costs associated with the cars, guesses. That's the best I can do is just guess. But those are some of the things that we can do if you'd like. 602-508-0960. This show's been on the air, this radio show's been on the air since 1988, and we've had a lot of shops that have supported it. So when I talk about shops, I know these guys personally, and I know that they do a good job. And a good example is Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington, been around since, I think, 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission experts, and what's good about them is you can call them up and say, can I stop by at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon? And I can duplicate the problem and maybe have somebody ride with me. And I can teach them how to duplicate the problem, and then we can talk about the repair and the estimate and stuff. So if you can duplicate a problem and you've learned how to do that, then they typically can tell you what it is and how much it'll cost to fix it. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. Good shop. The phones are all wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. As with any kind of car show, I'm as good as your answers to me. It's important for you to know, and it's okay, that your answers can be yes, no, or I don't know. Those are acceptable answers. It seems like sometimes, think of it from my point of view, if I say, does it do it cold but not hot, then you answer wrong, I'm going to go in the wrong direction because of that. But that's kind of how it works. Motorhomes and cars, trucks, vehicle emissions, hot rods, any of those kinds of things are things that we talk about on a regular basis, and you're welcome to join us. If you want to follow us, you can on Facebook and or Instagram, and in both applications, we talk car stuff. So it's about car stuff. It's not Mark's in the garden gardening or Mark's got a sore throat, none of that stuff. It's just about car stuff. So Mark Salem at Facebook, and Instagram is Salem Boys Auto, the shop that we've owned since 1994. So those are the things, and it's not about my shop. It's about your car problem, and if you want me to refer you someplace, I will. Just tell me the geographical location of where you're at, or if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area and you're listening to us on iHeartRadio, then just give me a zip code area, and typically I can call a couple of parts vendors, and they can tell me, they'll find out for me who a good shop is in your geographical area. All of that comes with no compensation for Mark. It's just a matter of we can do it, and we do it, and we do a good job at referring you in those kinds of situations. Gil, do we have a caller?
Yes, we do. Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning. How are you?
Good. Hi, Mark. So my son took his 2014 GMC into an alignment shop because he's going to get new tires because he's got 74,000 miles on his existing set. Okay. They're pretty worn. But the alignment shop said they wouldn't do the alignment till he got their new tires because he said there's no point in doing an alignment with worn-out tires. I wondered what you thought about that.
That is a pretty prevalent point of view, but from a practical issue, it's not. The alignment machine doesn't know what kind of tires you got on the front of your car. They can be bald, they can be brand new, and it doesn't care. When we hook the heads up to the front tires and the rear wheels, we're using sensors, and we roll the truck forward and backward on the rack to make sure all the tires are standing up straight. So, yes, that used to be, and evidently still is, a reason, but I like to do it before you put the new tires on it because I like to see the wear pattern of the old tires. So I want to see if the outside edges are worn, which I expect they're going to be a little worn because we turn and we turn left and right. The tire kind of lays over. I want to look at the inflation, see if we're wearing the center of the tire out or if we're wearing the edges out. So I kind of like to see the old ones, but there's two points of view. It's up to your son. I mean, he can find another shop, or he can abide by that guy's suggestion and wait till he gets the new tires. Have you seen the tires? Is there any abnormal wear or anything?
Yeah, there was, and the shop did make note of it. He said, "Well, I wanted you to see because the one wear pattern was pretty bad, And they said, well, yeah, we'll note the, you know, the wear pattern, but they said to optimize the new tires, you should have them on the vehicle when they do the OI.
The only time I would say I agree with that verbiage is if we're going to go different sizes, or if we're going to take mags off and, you know, take factory tires and wheels off and put, you know, big time mag wheels and tires on it. Yeah, I kind of want to align it if we're going to change the tire size, the width, the height. But other than that, if it's apples for apples, then I respectfully decline to say that to my customers.
I got one other quick question.
Go ahead.
If you're doing a transmission flush and you have three kinds of fluid, like, but they're all Dextron 6 compatible, like say you got some, you know, GM, the regular Dextron 6, and you got some Valvoline Max Life, and you got some Amsoil, can you mix them, like if you're doing a transmission flush, or should you stick with the same manufacturer?
No, you're asking me personally. I wouldn't care. If it's Dex 6, then it's Dex 6. And it's all made to the same specifications, or it wouldn't have the Dex 6 designation. And I don't really care. There's no factory that makes Amsoil. This oil question comes up all the time. But there's four major companies that pull oil out of the ground and then make oil, and everybody else just puts it in their own bottle. So the answer is if you've got all of those, I wouldn't have any problem with that at all.
Okay, thanks.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much, Bob. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have listeners on iHeartRadio, and that number is an 800 number, so it's 888-960-9696. Toll free outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. And even though I was born and raised in Arizona, I do have a lot of experience in the cold weather areas and how we kind of adapt. My industry, the car repair industry, kind of adapts to Casper, Wyoming, or Lake Havasu City, Arizona, where it's hotter than hell, and stuff like that. So we can have those discussions, and frankly, me answering a question by saying I don't know is something I'm not afraid to do. But we can discuss the parameters of your question. This could be this or this could be that. But those are the kinds of calls that we welcome. 602-508-0960. We have lots of lines. They're all open right now. And if you want to call, you can. When it comes to how you pay for your repair on your car, my suggestion has always been and continues to be, it's a good idea for you to pay with a credit card, which gives you some leverage over the repair shop in the event something happens, some kind of calamity happens. Every repair shop makes mistakes. Mine did not too long ago. We did a suspension changeover on a new Jeep, and he was out in the rocks in Utah, and the sway bar link came apart on one side. Clearly, we forgot to tighten up that side. Clearly. He took some pictures. He sent them to us. We looked at it. We said, "You'll be fine. Just take the rest of the link assembly off, and you'll go on your ride, and you'll be fine. And when you get here, we'll make it right." And what came apart has nothing to do with the alignment. So by towing it behind your motorhome from Utah to Arizona, it's not going to affect anything. So it was a nice kind of exchange with respect to putting the customer back into, you know, trust in us, but. The pictures he sent us, and then the response is really appropriate. It's okay. Don't worry about it. And so the Jeep got back, and it's a friend of mine, and so I'm a little ornery. And so instead of just putting one lock nut on the top of this link assembly, I put three lock nuts on each one, and I'm sure it will make the owner of the Jeep laugh when he gets it, because he'll know it's me, and he'll know. But I'm making sure that it's never going to come apart again. But we did. We left the nuts loose on the sway bar link assembly, which is on the ends of them, and it's our fault, and we'll make it right. And I know lots and lots of the shops that would raise their hand as well. Yep, that's my fault. I'm sorry. And so we're not able to fix every car perfectly, and sometimes we make mistakes, but I doubt very seriously if the repair shop's within a 100-mile radius of me, and I know most of them, and I respect most of them, nobody's ever made a mistake on purpose. That doesn't mean the technician doesn't do something that might butter his bread, but most of the time, most of us will not let, if Johnny did the work on it and it comes back with a problem, Johnny's not going to get the car. We're going to send it to Fred. Fred's going to do it, and then Fred's a neutral kind of guy, and we'll talk to Fred about what'd you find, is it something we should have seen, stuff like that. Those are the kinds of issues that we kind of deal with. But I've been in the car, I've been pumping gas since 1968, and I've been in the car repair business since 1979. So we've been around a little bit and seen good and seen bad. But the part about car repair is that the guys that go in with the idea of making a whole bunch of money by selling, upselling. Every time you come in for something simple, you get a laundry list of things that your car needs. And in my opinion, more than 90% of the time, the list of your needs does not jive with the maintenance schedule in your owner's manual, the owner's manual, which was written for your car. So the shop may be saying you need a transmission service at 30 when the owner's manual says that that's a 100,000-mile service interval. So those are the kinds of things that you should beware of, and your owner's manual is really the one that's going to help you out with that. And it's entirely appropriate for you to say, you know, Mark, let me go get my owner's manual out of my car, and can we dog-ear the page that says that I need to service my transmission at 30,000 miles? I must have missed that. Is that okay? That's kind of a nice way to handle it. And obviously, if they don't have time to do that, it's probably because they already know. You see, in the old days, we did do services every 30,000 miles. We did coolant, and oftentimes we did brakes and transmission services, and obviously changing the oil every 3,000. That's all changed. That's all changed in the last 10 years. We're doing oil changes at between 7,500 and, depending on the kind of car, up to 20,000 miles on oil changes, although I'm a fan of, I don't like to go past 12. I just kind of don't like to go past 12. But that's my personal opinion. Now, we have all the rest of the fluids in the car. They're at 17 service, or at 100,000-mile service. So things have changed. The fluids have changed. The needs have changed. But it's in our best interest if we get you to deviate from the owner's manual, because we get more work out of your car than really what the manufacturer of your car said. So 602-508-0960, and if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, our number is 888-960-9696. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're here till noon talking about car repair questions, tires, oil, all that kind of jazz. And if you have a question, it's easy, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. I've known Nate for many, many years, and when it comes to diehard diesel people for service, repair, and some aftermarket parts, both foreign and domestic, Chevy, Dodge, and Ford, then Nate's your guy. Strictly Diesel is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate's a good guy, and once you meet him, you'll understand why I like him so much. He's a gentle giant, but you can just shake his hand and talk to him for 3 or 4 minutes, and you know that Nate's the last person that's going to take advantage of you. So that's Nate at Strictly Diesel. Let's go to the phones, and we've got a caller, Harold. Harold, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having your show. I enjoy it a lot.
Well, thank you.
I have a kind of a simpleton type question for you. On both of my vehicles, when I open the door, the dome light comes on brightly. I close the door, the dome light stays on for maybe 4 or 5 seconds, and then it gradually dims and goes out. I got two questions for you. One is, how is this technically accomplished, the dimming process? And two, is there a failure mode that could happen, that this thing could fail and your dome light could stay on all night and then you got a battery problem in the morning?
Okay, fair enough. There's two wires to the dome light. We obviously have a power and a ground. We're going to control both of those wires. In the old days, we just turned on the power and turned off the power. But because with computers, we can gradually go up on the ground and down on the ground, or we can go gradually up on the power and down on the power. So will it fail on all the time? I've never seen that happen. I'm not saying never. I said I've never seen it happen, because most of the time the ground is at the door switch. So if you close the door, then that interrupts the ground and shuts off the lights. And I can tell you, we probably mess with door switches one car a year out of maybe tens of thousands of cars. So, and as far as how do we do it, it's the same way with the rheostat on your air conditioning controls. We have low, medium, high, extra high, and blow the curlers out of your wife's hair high. It's the same way. We're going to use a rheostat to just bring those lights down and bring them up. And so you're talking about a circuit. If I queried dome lights, dome light in our database, I bet I wouldn't find a dome light issue other than a bulb. Please replace a bulb. I bet I nobody spent any money on dome lights in 10 years other than a bulb. That would be it. So it's a pretty bulletproof system. The weak spot might be the door switch on the driver's side, which gets the most used. But other than that, this doesn't take a million-dollar education to fix it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome, Harold. 602-508-0960, outside the Phoenix area, 888-960-9696. And we can talk about... And I'm especially good when husbands and wives are having a disagreement about some portion of the car or how to handle it or what to do. I'm really good at that. I used to be a marriage counselor, and I didn't last very long. But those kinds of arguments are always a lot of fun. And typically there's a reasonable basis for both positions. But, do I shift it into neutral when I come to a traffic light? And my dad used to say that it adds life to the transmission and to this and to that. And does it add life if I shift to neutral? Is there a safety issue when I shift to neutral? What happens if all hell breaks loose in front of me? I'm going to have to say, wait a minute, I got to put it in drive or reverse before I back out of this mess or make a hard right turn to get out of the calamity that's happening in front of me. Those are the kinds of things. And I'm ready for the next caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Danny.
Danny, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mark. I have a 2014 Volkswagen Rutan, and my check engine light, it's on, and I had it scanned, and apparently I'm supposed to be having problem with the torque converter. Do you have a shop that I could take the car and get it tested and pay for it, and they will tell me what's wrong with this thing, and somebody that I can trust to. I'm in Buckeye.
Okay. You're going to have to come into Phoenix on 40th Street and Washington, which is automatic transmission exchange. But let me tell you, I think I would I'd go buy this a little different. The first thing I'd do is I'd stop by an auto parts store and have them check your code and have them give you their stereotypical piece of paper that explains the code. And it explains the repair, which is more wrong than right, but that's okay. But then have them clear the code for you. So read it, print it, hand me the printed copy, and then clear the code, and let's see if it comes back. That's the first thing. We don't want to spend a bunch of money, because there are certain scenarios that could cause the computer to say, uh-oh, and turn the light on, but it never sees it again after that. So we want to clear it, and keep in mind the code just means the computer saw something wrong. It's not a situation that's going to leave you stranded. It never leaves you stranded. So the code is yellow. That's why the check engine light is yellow. But that's my procedure. I think you're far better off to have somebody read it, print out the data, and then clear it, and then let's see what happens. Because what happens if it doesn't come on for 5-6 weeks?
2 minutes.
There's no problem to fix.
Okay.
Was your wife driving it when that light came on?
No, I was driving it, and it's been on for a week now. The only thing I kind of noticed on the transmission, but it's been for a while, when you come in that shift, downshift, you almost come to a stop, sometime you feel a little bit of a hard shift going down to the lower gear. But other than that, on the upshift, it's smooth, and but there is that little bit of a difference.
Okay, how many miles are on it?
There are 105, and the transmission oil was changed at 80,000.
Okay. What you can talk about, the common words for what you talked about is I have a harsh downshift. Harsh downshift. Another thing I'd do too if I were you is I would manually shift it up through the gears, and then I would manually shift it down through the gears and see if you see anything unusual as you manually shift it up, 1, 2, 3, 4, overdrive, lock up, and when you shift it down. I think that's what I'd do too. That will help your transmission shop. But automatic transmission exchange would be the guys I'd call, and they're going to ask you to bring it in so they can do what I just described you can do, but you can do it through the parts, some parts store out where you live. Okay? All right. Thank you very much for the call. That's an interesting call. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. And we have 5 lines available. Gil's the one that answers the phone. He's a really nice guy. He's been taught not to use bad words. So if he uses bad words, then I want you to email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I'm going to snitch him off to the management. But I think he's over that idea. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And my name is Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, or if you have a disagreement with your wife about what to do about this on your car, then I'm good at settling those kinds of disputes, because typically the wife is right, if that gives you a clue as to the path of least resistance for me. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. One of the shops here in town in Phoenix that I've known Tom since 1983, he owns Action Auto Repair. He's up at Deer Valley in the I-17. He knows what he's doing. He knows right from wrong. He's been around good technicians and bad technicians, like most of us shop owners that have 30 and 40 years underneath our belts. We know the rap, and we can smell a bad technician, and it doesn't take us long to figure that out. Or a technician that wants to just sell, because he's paid on commission. So sometimes we put those guys on hourly, sometimes we just throttle them back just a little bit, but we make them understand that everything that they do has to do with what's right and what's in the best interest for the customer. It's not about making your paycheck fatter at their expense. You don't have to worry about that at Action Auto Repair. They don't do that. And none of the shops that I tell you about will do that. So Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, a great place if you don't have a shop and you live in that area. I get lots of calls about oil, and I am an oil expert. I've been trained by Valvoline and Chevron. And to give you an example, a friend of mine called and he says, I have a new Range Rover, and they, quote, recommend their oil. The problem that the reason why they recommend is because if they say that you have to use our oil, the Range Rover oil, then we have to provide it for free. So the recommend is in quotes, and it's a C5 oil, and that's a classification that doesn't mean nothing to anybody, but the fact of the matter, it's a C5 oil. Well, I looked it up, and there's a whole bunch of C5 oils out there that are named brands. There's Castrol, there's Chevrolet, there's Valvoline, there's Havoline. There's all those companies that have an oil, and it's a 020 synthetic. So if your dealership or your car manufacturer says that you have to use their product, then the Magnuson-Moss Act says that they have to provide it for you for free. So if they say you have to use our coolant or our oil, or if you're ever told that, then just tell them to write that down and sign their name to it, and you'll check back with them later. And if they know that they're telling you a lie, then they probably won't sign their name to their business card and write it down. But it's really important to know that there's no such thing as a company that makes a can of oil for Range Rover or Chevrolet or Ford or Dodge. They're buying oil from one of the four big major manufacturers. That's all there is to it. And so there's no such thing as a General Motors plant. They pour the oil into a different can, but it's going to come from Phillips, it's going to come from Mobil, it's going to come from Shell, or it's going to come from Chevron. And those are the four guys that have oil and make oil, but they just put it in different bottles. So if it says 020 and you're looking for a synthetic and you're in Walmart or in an auto parts store, just buy the cheapest one you find. That's what I do. Not too long ago, I needed to change the oil on a tractor, and I have a synthetic in it, and I didn't bring up a couple of gallons from Tempe to up north. And so I just went to the Walmart, and I just bought some 020, and I didn't even recognize the name of the brand. But it's okay. So remember, if you're told that you have to use a specific oil by the manufacturer or anybody represents that, then they have to provide it for you for free. And that goes with refrigerants, that goes with tires and brakes and all that kind of stuff. It's important to know that there's not a factory out there, that there's not companies out there that have a factory that builds all the parts that are sold in their box. Napa Auto is a good example. There's no such place as a Napa. He's buying ball joints from where everybody else is buying ball joints, and they're putting them in a box. That's it. So it is true that there are some premium brands out there. It is true that sometimes I'm looking for a specific brand, especially on the ignition side of things. The spark, the fuel, the coils, the wires, the spark plugs, the pickup assemblies, the crankshaft sensors, camshaft sensors, those kinds of things. But in reality, it's not like that I have 20 options when I narrow it down to who really makes, who has a factory that makes these. There's probably three or four manufacturers that make everybody's spark plugs. So no matter how much you like Motorcraft or you like Delco or you like Fuzzy Button spark plugs, pretty much they all came from one of four different vendors that make spark plugs. So that's the way the automotive industry is, and that's actually the way it's been for a very long time. 602-508-0960. My email is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question, you want to email me your question, you can. Please leave me a phone number so I can call you back, because I'm always going to have questions. What about this? Or when does it do this? Or is it cold? Is it hot? Or whatever. So that helps me out a lot, and I call from a blocked number, but I'll usually just know that you're not going to answer it. So I say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'm calling about your email, and I'll call you back in 15 minutes, and hopefully you'll answer in 15 minutes. Okay, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here on Saturdays talking about car and car repair questions and problems, and you're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair shop. They have been recognized in the past as a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, and that really does say a lot. Since they opened their doors in 1987, they've been working on domestic and import car, both gas and diesel. They have ASE certified technicians, which means that your vehicle is going to be repaired by somebody who has the equivalent of a degree, a college degree in auto repair. Because when you're ASE certified, you've passed some very stringent tests, and when you're a master, you've passed them all. So Kurtz has got masters that work for him, and certainly a great place. So I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive. Marty, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, I have two questions, one for each of my Subarus. I have a 2017 Subaru BRZ. It's just kind of my weekend one car, but I get like carbon deposits on the exhaust tips. Is that anything to worry about?
No, not at all. And this time of the year, it's even worse. Even all the vehicles I have that are gasoline motors are going to be spitting black water in the morning all over the driveway or all over wherever. And so, yeah, this time of the year. But the tailpipe's going to be black no matter whether you got a gas or a diesel motor, and the computer is going to consume all the fuel being delivered, do its best with the oxygen sensor's help to consume all the fuel, and what comes out is soot. So unless it's billowing black smoke, I'm not worried about it.
Okay, thanks. And then my other car, I had an 05 Subaru Forester Turbo that never went to the dealer till it had like 285,000 miles on it. I lost compression in one cylinder, and they said I should have had a valve lash adjustment done at 100,000 miles. There's nothing in the owner's manual. But so I had such good luck with that one, I found a used 08, which was the last of the same style with 32,000 miles on it. And so now I have like 253,000 on that one, and it's still running good. But is that something I should look at or consider doing? I found it on, you know, your favorite YouTube. So there is a procedure. It's like the lifters ride in these little cups that have different stamps in them for
thicknesses.
You can replace, yeah, to adjust them. You just change those cups.
Yeah. There's a wide variety. VW has always been a weird vehicle that has does things completely different than everybody else. But let's examine this. If the lash is too wide, there's going to be clatter. And it'll be obvious because it'll be on one side or the other of your motor or in the front or the back of the motor. Or when you disconnect the spark plug, it might very well go away. Disconnect the wire to the spark plug or the coil to the spark plug or the feed to the spark plug, whatever. So, and if it's too tight, it'll backfire because it's holding the valve open. I object to the fact that people in our industry are good enough to look over the last 200,000 miles of a car and say to the owner, you should have done this. Because 200,000 miles is really eight times around the girth of the earth, the equator. And I'm not good enough, and I don't think anybody but Jesus Christ might be good enough to tell us what's going on. So I think it's kind of an explanation why you need to spend a whole bunch of money. I'm going to tell you you should have had your valves adjusted, and you didn't, and as a result, this is your fault. I think in the background that might be the what the jabber really is. But again, if they're noisy and they clatter, and they'll clatter cold and get better when it's warm, but it'll be an obvious clatter that's loose, and then too tight, we got a backfire. And we've got an engine that intermittently runs poorly.
Okay, gotcha. So no symptoms, I shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, you know, they're really obvious symptoms. And so it's like sometimes, you know, if I'm in front of you and I'm my age, I'm looking for hearing aids. and if you have them, then I'm not going to bring that up. But if not, I'll say, you know, would you be capable of hearing a clatter? And I mean, you know, I don't know. My hearing is bad, and I don't know about you, but if it was clatter. And you know, the clatter is very similar to an exhaust leak. So it's not uncommon for somebody to come in and say, I've got, you know, a valve clatter, and we find it's an exhaust leak, because they're both kind of ticky kind of sounds. But, no, I need you to run away from the idea that you caused that problem before. Just forget about that. It just happened, and they decided to blame it on you. And it's not fair.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. You bet, Marty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Gil, would you do me a favor? On your air gun, would you jack the sound up a little bit on that? And... even a little bit more is fine with me. Okay, I got it. All righty, thank you, Gil. Does that mean we have a caller?
Yes. Say hello to Tom.
Tom, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I've got a simple question for you. I have an 07 Ford Ranger, and it uses 520 synthetic blend oil. But in my owner's manual, I cannot find it. It doesn't give the service intervals. It doesn't tell you how often to change the oil.
I got it.
I grew up changing, you know, peanut butter oil every 3,000 miles. I've heard you say that with the synthetic blends you can get away with 5,000. Is that okay for that vehicle, you think?
Absolutely. 5 to 8. You can go anywhere you want. Yes. It's
okay.
Each one of them, conventional, if I can use a range, 3 to 5,000 miles, a semi-synthetic 5 to 7, 5 to 8,000 miles, a synthetic from 8 to 20. Now, Mercedes will say one thing, BMW will say another. I'm real comfortable with the 10 to 12,000 mark. So all the vehicles in our fleet that are on synthetic oil, we're doing 12,000 mile intervals. Some of our delivery trucks at the shop get two a year. But then there's cars in the rental car fleet that only get one a year. So it's kind of like that. But, no, you'll be fine, and you can change it anytime between 5 and 8,000 miles. Obviously, you're likely to be a quart lower at the add mark at the end of your time frame, it's okay. You don't add oil till it's below the add mark. So
okay.
Add mark to full mark is 1 quart. So if it's approaching the add mark but it's not under the add mark and you add a quart, you're going to overfill it. And 1 out of 100 times, that might puff a blue smoke out the tailpipe every once in a while. But don't worry about it.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, then that's the phone number you call. We're going to be back at the top of the hour, at the 11 o'clock hour, about 3, 4, 5 minutes after. And we're going to have another hour of car talk. And we have a new caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Larry.
Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, thanks for your show. It's I'm as mechanically inclined as a rock, so running errands, I'm learning a lot, for sure. But, hey, I had a quick question. I have a 2017 Tahoe, and the mechanic I'm working with, which does a great job for us, is suggesting I get my the strut. What is the suspension kind of deal on the front of the car?
Struts.
Yeah. And they are freaking expensive. And so I was in an accident. I had it repaired. It was a front end collision. I think that is what caused it, but regardless of the case, he wants me to do both of them. It's like, I want to say it's like $2,500, $3,000, something like that. What is the damage to the car, or is it just part of the ride that I'm missing by getting that repaired or putting it off? You know, you can go into like Chevrolet and they'll give you a menu of 100 things that you probably should be it fixed, and they'll, if you've got a good service guy, he'll say, here's red, you need to get this done, here's a wait and see, here's like, don't worry about it, you've got an older car. I'm just curious. I've got about 80,000 miles on the vehicle.
Okay. Well, the strut is two components. It's the spring that maintains the ride height. So the spring keeps the front bumper 10 inches off the ground, and when the bumper goes down to 8, the spring pops it back up, and when the bumper goes up to 12, the spring pushes back down. So the spring is shrouded, or the shock, the strut is shrouded by the spring.
Okay.
That is a highly, we make a lot of money. We take the spring and the strut out, and typically we buy a package, spring and strut, put it back in, and then we get the alignment. If the shock is leaking, you'll see it, and that does need to be replaced. But if it's not leaking, that's kind of a check mark on the shock side. The second thing is we look at the rubber bumpers, and the rubber bumper is about 4 or 5 inches away from the other portion of the frame. And so we look and see how many times the rubber bumper has hit the frame. And if it's flattened up the rubber bumper, then it's been a lot. And if it's never touched the bumper, then that's good. So, and then you bounce the car. You just simply get in the front of it and you push down, you know, as hard as you can, and it should go. You push down and then it goes up and then it goes down and then it settles. Sometimes when you push down, it bounces 2 or 3 times, up, down, up, down, up, down, settle. Well, that's a shock absorber that's lost its valves. That's a shock absorber that no longer is working because it's just vacillating. And when you drive down the road, you hit something, and the front end of the car on the right side shakes more than the left side does. At 80,000 miles, I need to see from my staff why they think this needs struts and shocks. Struts or shocks, and sometimes springs. And at 80,000 miles, I'm really going to give them the cockeyed smile like, come on, are you sure you want me to come out into the shop and you show me something stupid? There's nothing that says that it's an 80,000 mile thing or a 100,000 mile thing. And I want to tell you something. I got struts on my Dodge truck, and I'm at 140, and I ain't replacing them until they start leaking.
Okay.
And so I think here's the question. Mark, thank you very much for looking my car over good, and I noticed that you had a concern with the struts and stuff. But tell me what symptom you're going to fix by replacing my struts.
Right, that's kind of what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And is there one thing that I'm hopefully, you know, wisdom is I'm not doing that again. You know, that's kind of what the definition of wisdom is. one of the things I've had to learn the hard way is sometimes when I avoided fixing something, it causes a bigger problem. That's what I'm really trying to avoid.
Okay.
The car seems to drive great, but they did show me diagnostically where this needs to be replaced, and they are recommending it, but I just...
But what did they show you? Yeah. What was it, an alignment specifications?
It wasn't an alignment. It was a... I think it was a computer deal. Like, I mean, everything's computerized in these. I mean, this,
okay.
This Tahoe is like I'm driving a computer, but it's a, you know, it's an SUV.
And yeah.
So it's based upon their, you know, they plug that deal into the. Again, I'm showing my knowledge.
No. They're plugging their scanner into your car at the assembly line data link. It's called the ALDL, and they're reading something. But I want to tell you something. There's nothing in your damn Tahoe that talks about the front struts. There is nothing in that computer that is monitoring those struts. We could take the struts out, and you wouldn't have a check engine light for the rest of your life. So to create the can you see I'm kind of wadded up about this? To create the perception that I can plug into your car and tell you you need struts is pure bull manure. I don't care. You've been around the world 3 times in that truck, but if they're not leaking and he doesn't have an answer for what symptom are you going to fix that I have, then that's the end of the conversation. The answer, the good answer is, you have cupping on the front tires, and the right front is worse than the left front, and the right front is leaking oil. Walk out here and let me show you. Now, let's look at the back tires. Notice that cupping is not present on the back tires. So you haven't been rotating them like you should. Shame on you, Larry. But you'll notice that the right front's worse than the left front, and the right front's leaking oil, and I want to do them in pairs, Larry. That's the way it is. That's what you want. So that's the way I would approach it. But this is the worst of our industry, where we start selling stuff based on some kind of perceived knowledge of looking into the future. And the only time I can look into the future is every morning when I wake up, I know that I'm going to wake up because I didn't make her mad, and I'm not going to wake up with blood coming out of my ears because she punched me when I was sleeping. But the idea is that there are symptoms, and remember that. What symptoms do I have now that you're going to fix with your suggested $2,000 repair? That's the answer. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's 5 of them. 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. This is KKNT 960 on iHeart. Well, thank you very much. Anytime you want, just give us a call. 602-508-0960. There are a lot of shops out there, auto repair shops, and some of them do stuff based on the needs on your service manual in your car. So at this particular point, you need a tire rotation. At this particular point, you need a transmission flush, and there's shops out there that do that. There's other shops that are diagnosticians, and they figure out why your windshields are flapping, your windshield wipers flap without any input from you on Thursday at 1 o'clock. Then you got the maintenance guys. The maintenance guys are out there just doing maintenance. Otherwise, whatever you just do will do it for you. Then you have specialized guys. There are shops in town that have all of those bases covered, and Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue in School, is just one of those shops. Been around since 1967. They can find and fix things that few other shops can. And they're really very good. And I personally have sent a couple of very difficult cars to them that we talked with the customer on the radio. And they were able to fix the car to the customer's complete satisfaction. So if you want somebody who does oil changes, and you want somebody to be the world's best diagnostician, then Harker's, you'll find both of those people, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto. Billy, good morning. Oh, I think we're going to go to Chris first. And
that's
Chris,
right.
And Chris, he has a Titan, and you had a question. What would that be?
Yeah, Mark, I always wanted a big 4x4. I saw a real nice, perfect 2021 Nissan Titan, raised up 6 inches, and... I'm just thinking the higher up they are, the more it costs, because mechanics aren't 9 feet tall, correct?
No. It doesn't make any difference. You see, if we get one of those big cars in and we need to work under the hood, we just take the front tires off of it and lower it down on the hoist.
Ah,
Okay, so and then if you need a tire rotation, you at my shop you get one for free because I'm just going to go ahead and put the tire. It depends on who did it, what documentation comes with the truck. It depends
it's
on front.
No, it's a brand new truck. It's $80,000. That's the hard part. It's writing the check.
Okay. I don't like that idea because, first of all, I don't know how much of the $80,000 is this 5 or 6 inch lift. Number two, I don't think. Now, I want to tell you,
but
I'm not telling you the
grand for the list and tires.
Okay.
On their paper.
Okay. This show isn't about my shop, so I don't name my shop. But we have a division that does that, and I'm not quite sure that we would agree to do that to a Titan. 6 inches is a lot of room.
Right.
And now the question is the speedometer and odometer been recalibrated for the tires? Okay.
Because I went by one of the school zones, and it was right on.
Okay. The other thing that it worries about is how is this going to affect the warranty? Because you've modified everything from the bumper down significantly.
From the dealer, though.
Doesn't make any difference. So they need to put that in writing.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, we've got a differential that blows up because we've got these 36-inch tall tires on it because we got a 6-inch lift on it, and they go, well, that's your fault. And you go, wait a minute, this isn't my fault. My wife was driving it. So I don't like it. And then let's turn it around and say, you say, I'm looking at a used car. I'd say to you, look at the tire wear on all four tires. That's all you need to know. Because we do this, and we see this, and what happens is we get those things up in the air, and then all of a sudden we can't adjust the front end. So we've got abnormal tire wear on the outside edge of both front tires because we can't get them straight up and down, and it happens at the back. So we kind of shy away from those really big 6 and 8 and 10 inch lifts, but
right.
We do them. But the overwhelming majority of the lift kits we do, we're leveling the car or truck. We're bringing the nose up a couple inches, or we're dropping the back down, or whatever. But I don't know. It's your 80K.
I'd rather have a cabin.
Yeah. And besides, let me ask you a question. Think about this. It's a 6-inch lift. Think about this. That's 3 inches above the horizontal line and 3 inches below the horizontal line. You're not lifting that vehicle 6 inches. You're lifting it 3 inches because the other 3 inches is on the top of the tire and one is on the bottom of the tire. So people go out and they go, well, I can go four-wheeling. Yeah, if you got 3 more inches of lift. If you're out there banging on the bottom of that truck, you probably shouldn't be there anyway.
Yeah.
So.
And a friend of mine who's a mechanic said, Chris, don't walk, run. Okay, that's what he told me.
There's so much missing.
They're powered for, if you're going to tow some motor, horse trailer or something heavy, they don't have the power.
They don't. We've changed the dynamics of the vehicle, and we're going to change the gear ratio to the vehicle, and you need a 10 speed after we're done because of low gear. So you know what? I'm impressed with the guy that told you that. I want to raise my hand with him and say you should listen to him. Okay?
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you very much, Chris. Billy, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, maybe you can give me some advice there. I'm fixing to install a battery in my car.
Okay.
Now, I talked to you. Now, about 7 years ago, you told me on the phone, you said to put some black silicone around the bottom of the post of those battery.
You mean like silicone?
Silicone. You said put some black silicone around, and I did.
Okay.
But that was 7 years ago. Now I'm wondering, and also, do I put some grease around those posts, that the electric grease, to make it contact better?
Is it a top post battery or a side post battery?
A top post.
Post, okay. I think there was a time where we had batteries that were weeping acid at the very bottom of the top posts. And there was a time I was saying to people, I'd like you to take some brake spray, clean that area off, then put a couple of layers of whatever silicone you want, and that will kind of seal up that area to where the moisture of the acid will not contaminate the cable above it. But I want to tell you, That's not something I've said in a long time. So I think you can skip the silicone. But if you want to do, what you use is those pads. They make these little bitty pads that slide over the positive and the negative, and it absorbs any moisture or acid that is emitted from the post, at the bottom of the post. Now, they also make a red oxide spray, and you can buy a small 6-ounce can of that. And so you put your battery in, or you wash your tray out real good, clean everything up, put your battery in, put your cables on it, and then you just paint your cables with that spray. Let me tell you one other option. What we do is we don't use the pads and we don't use the silicone anymore. What we do is we paint the battery cables with red and black enamel. So at nighttime, when your wife is out with the girls and the battery's dead and they need to hook up the jumper cables, it's easy for you to say, hook the black end of the jumper cable to the black connection, and so forth and so on. So we don't find that we need to spend any money on keeping the cables clean on the cars that have been made in the last 10 years, but we ourselves have decided that we copied this idea from another gray-haired technician that I respected, that we paint them red and black so that when they need to jump it, they don't have to look very hard. So that's how we do it.
Okay, well, I have used those pads for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and I have used that red oxide stuff. I think I'm out of it now. But now, should I put that the electric grease around the post? Does that help?
Well, it's either the grease or this red oxide spray. You don't want to do both of them.
But the grease will work.
The grease will work, but the grease is going to be susceptible to the temperatures underneath the hood. So it's going to be soft and kind of runny when it's really, really hot in Phoenix during the summertime. And it's going to be thick and stays there in the wintertime. So I think grease is a dirty fix for a simple problem. I think I'd rather see you use the pads and the spray than anything else. I think if you're worried about contamination, the pads and the spray, I think, is the home run. I think, okay. I don't like the grease.
Yeah, and then clean the cables up, you know, on the inside, and of course, you know.
Yeah.
Because I just bought a new battery for $186, so I want to just kind of make sure that I do it right. I mean, I was pretty sure about it, but I knew you would know more about it than me.
Well,
One more quick question.
Sure.
I got a 2018 Ford F-150 truck with a check light engine on. I took it to the dealership. They was going to, you know, they wanted to keep it for 2 or 3 weeks, and they were going to charge me $150 to check it, and only had 4,000 miles on it. And I changed the oil myself at 3,000. I put some mobile in it.
Okay.
So I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time dealing with them. I wrote them letters, and I just want to ask you, what would you? I heard you talk about it on the radio. I listen to you every Saturday. Okay. What would you charge or what's the procedure if I bring it in to you and you can check that light and see what's going on?
Well, let me start at the beginning. Right now, all of us are behind. So we're all behind. We're all okay. Booking 5 days in advance, except for the ones that come in on a tow truck. In your particular case, it is entirely possible, and it happens more often than anybody will agree to. But I'll give you the same recommendation I gave the earlier caller. Stop by a Napa store. Stop by a O'Reilly store. Have them pull the code, give you the paperwork that explains the code, and clear the code. Let's first make sure that it wasn't just a 1 or 2 or 3 time day. It was on a Thursday at 2 o'clock that something happened 3 times in a row, which turns the check engine light on, and the check engine light hasn't been triggered since. So let's do that first. Let's clear the code and drive it again and see if the same code comes back. There's no harm, there's no foul, and you can have that done at the auto parts store for free.
Okay, now I took it into the dealership when that light come on, and the guy asked me, when did the light come on? I said, I don't know. They got so many lights on these things. You know, this is my first new truck in 40 years.
Yeah.
And so the guy plugged it in. The service guy plugged it in the dash, and he said, "Well, there's something wrong with the emission."
Okay.
He says, go to the service department and set up a date. And I did, and they put me in the wrong line, and and they wouldn't keep my vehicle for 2 weeks. I couldn't get a loaner. So anyway, I want you to know something.
Okay, stop. The light is yellow. The light means caution. There's nothing on a check engine light that's going to cause the motor blow up day after tomorrow. There's nothing there. Red lights are in the dash for that. Red lights that you're overheating. Red lights that you watch your oil pressure. Red light because of this. Red light because of that. It's yellow. It's caution. So you're not going to lose the motor. You're not going to cause you damage. The computer's too doggone smart to let you mess it up. So I'm just telling you, this is what's going on in our industry right now, and the dealers are stacked deep just like all the rest of us are. The problem is in your case, you can get it done for free. Go get it done for free. And it may not come back. It's okay. I'll tell you what, if you said to me, I'm going to take you, Mark Salem, to Las Vegas, and I'm going to let you gamble for 2 days. I don't gamble, by the way.
I don't either. No,
but I'm going to pay for you to gamble 2 days, and you're going to come with me, and if the truck breaks down, you're going to push me home. I'd go with you, because this check engine light doesn't scare me. So just let's do the plan. Let's go someplace else. Let's get a document and all that kind of stuff. I don't – and see, here's the – they want it for 2 weeks because they think I'm going to clear the code, go drive it, and it's not going to come back. That means I've got to just keep driving it till it comes back. I'm thinking, you got a 50-50 chance that'll never come back on, so why do we care? Let's just move on. That's what I think. I got to go. Thank you very much, Billy, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about your car problems, and you're welcome to join us. The lines are wide open. We have five of them. I can hear Gil snoring. Gil's the pilot of the plane. I get to sit in first class and just kind of relax a little bit. But anyway, 602-508-0960, and if you're outside Phoenix, then 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696, which dovetails nicely to 960 The Patriot, KKNT here in Phoenix. When it comes to cars and fast cars and stuff, I'm going to tell you that my family has decided that we're going to sell a car that's been in our family for a very long time. It's a special car. It's a 2006 Z06. It's got 23,000 miles on it. It's black on black. And we installed twin turbos on it a long time ago. It's a 6-speed manual, and it has all the options. So this is a brand new car. It's been garaged its whole life, and it has no miles on it at all and stuff like that. But the story goes like this. After this car was built, a bunch of old guys that I don't know who they were took this car to the raceway down in South Chandler, and they decided to see what kind of quarter mile time it turned. They drew straws, and one old guy got to drive it, and he did a 2-3 shift through the quarter mile. This car did a tall 8-second quarter mile at about 142, but there's an argument about what the speed was and what the exact time was. But this is like a rocket ship car with a 2-3 shift, doesn't. Well, 8.8, 8.9, 9, 9.1, 9.2. I'm going to just open the range up because nobody was really watching the clock. We just couldn't believe the car took off like it did. It wasn't me driving. There was someone else driving. But it's black on black. It's got heads-up display. My wife just drove it. I brought my truck down for service. I took the car back up to Payson because we need to exercise it every once in a while. And then she drove it down. And she said it was just... That's just like driving a dream. You get into fifth or sixth gear, you got plenty of power, it handles great, there's no vibrations, and it's a rocket ship. So if you're interested in a really, really fast car with 23,000 miles on it, but it's a 2006 Z06, then Mark at MarkSalem.com would be the guy that you'd want to talk to. The car is in Tempe near Warner and I-10, and we can show it there, and we'll show you where it lives, and you can drive it and do all that other kind of stuff. So here's part of my madness. I got grandkids that are approaching driving age, and I'm not going to have one of my grandkids die in this car, because this is way too much car, and I know that someday one of the grandkids is going to be allowed to drive this on to prom. I don't want it to be here. So I can make those kinds of decisions, and we've decided that we're going to get rid of it. We also have a Camaro with a blower on it. It's a 23,000-mile car, and it's a 2010. So it's, what, 12 years old with 22,000 miles, both of them inside their whole lives. But the Camaro we're going to hang on to because it's an automatic, and it's a fun car to drive with a blower on it. So if you're interested in either one of those or know anybody who does, it's a one-of-a-kind Corvette, and at an tall eight-second quarter mile, you wouldn't fear most anybody else at the racetrack. I'll just put it to you that way. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to spend just a few minutes on what's going on in your car with the computer. Everything on the cars today, the sensors and the computer, they talk in a language called voltage. So I'll give you an example. Let's pretend there's 5 volts in a system. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In reality, there is 5 volts or 8 volts, depending on the kind of car it is. But there's also, between 1 and 2, there's 100 points. But let's just do 1 through 5, okay? So when your foot is not on the throttle reports 1 to the computer. When your foot goes to the floor, the throttle position sensor instantly sends a 5 to the computer. The computer looks at the 5 and goes, "Oh my God, Mrs. Salem is driving the car again." The computer reaches over and opens up the valve for fuel, and then reaches over and opens up the timing. And he's watching timing and RPM and speed. Now all of a sudden, the knock sensor starts chattering, and it goes, "Oh, the timing's too far." So the computer reaches over and turns the timing from 31 degrees to 28 degrees, and then it looks at the knock sensor and it goes, "Are you still jabbering?" And the knock sensor says, "No, I'm fine." And so the computer says, "Okay, we just keep going." This happens 100 times a second. That's how it works. We're using voltage language, and we have sensors that tell the computer what they're doing, what the driver's doing, and the computer then dictates what the timing and the fuel delivery and all that kind of stuff is. ABS, you're driving down the road, all of a sudden you hammer the brakes. The right front tire locks up. The computer wakes up and says, "Oh, right front tire's locked up." The first thing it does is drop the pressure on the right front tire to get it to rotate again, but still maintain pressure. Meanwhile, the computer's watching the rest of the tires, and if they lock up, it dumps the pressure in the blink of an eye and then reapplies pressure in the blink of an eye, but the wheel is on maximum braking, but it's not locked up. So that's ABS, anti-lock brakes. So that's kind of how it works. It's really not that hard if you understand what's going on. So the computer sometimes, you'll get... there's just all kinds of codes that are set that are just something that has no, we don't know why. So the code is set, and we drive the car, we clear the code, we give it to the customer, we touch base with the customer 2 or 3 weeks later, no code, no check engine light, yeah, okay, fine, we're done. That's it. It was a brain fart. The computer had a brain fart. That's all you could say. So that happens a lot. So that's kind of how it all works. Yo, did you have a caller?
I just gave you your 2-minute warning.
Oh, you're giving me a 2-minute warning. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what happens, but what's really important when we're working on your car is that we understand what's going on. It's not uncommon for there to be some idiosyncrasy with some specific kind of car. There's also situations where intermittently you have an engine that's going to consume coolant because somebody overheated the engine but doesn't recognize that there's a head gasket that's seeping coolant into the combustion chamber. So we'll get a misfire on number 6. So we'll clear the code. Things running good. We say to the customer, "We can't find anything wrong. Bring it back when it happens again." Brings it back 13 days later, 14 days later. Code's there. It's number 6 cylinder. So you look at it, nothing, we can't see anything. So then you switch the spark plug from 5 to 6, and you think, okay, well, if the spark plug is defective, then the problem will move to the next cylinder. But it doesn't, it's still at that same cylinder, but the customer happens to say, "Hey, I've also got a little coolant light. Oh, maybe I should pressurize the cooling system. Oh, look here, I do have a leak. oh, where's that leak at? Oh, it's in number six cylinder. Okay, now I understand. That cylinder is sucking water, coolant, out of the engine in small amounts, which kills the cylinder. The spark and the gas don't get to ignite because there's too much moisture in the cylinder. So that's the misfire. So the fix isn't to replace the spark plug. The fix is go fix the water leak. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and 602-508-0960. I want to just touch on that Corvette that I'm selling now real quick. I'll tell you the real quick story. This Corvette was purchased by a guy who owned a contracting company. And as you well know, and I'm saying this with a big smile, the contractors, they're all hairy-chested, big-muscled guys that can handle anything. So he buys the car, and he hires us to put twin turbos on it. Now, the turbos are in the back of the car, means we have to run tubes to the front of the car, to the engine compartment. And so we went through the sills, which is the portion of the body below the doors. So the installation is like top-notch and clean, clean, clean. I'm very proud of it to this day. So we all go out to the Firebird Raceway, and we're just going to run it through the quarter mile. We draw straws. Raymond wins. Raymond gets in the car. He drives the quarter mile, and at the end of the quarter mile, the police chase him down. There's red lights and sirens and fire trucks and ambulances and stuff like that. They come back, and they kick all of us old guys. All of us are north of 60. All of us off the Indian Reservation, and we're never allowed to go back to Firebird Raceway because in order to run that fast, you have to have a fire suit, you have to have a roll bar, you have to have all this safety stuff. And my response was, we had no idea how fast this car was going to run. So like I said, it was a tall 8-second quarter mile, well over 140, and with a 2-3 shift. So it's a fun car, but it's also a very dangerous car. And we've owned it. We bought it right after that because he said, this is way too fast. And so we had already just put the twin turbo in it, so my family bought it. And it sat in the garage at the shop ever since then. So anyway, that's how it works. Matt, good morning. How can we help you with your car problem?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Question is, I bought my wife one of those big SUVs, basically dream car. But we get it home, and it says put 93 octane in this thing. My dad, who's a weekend workshop guy, says you don't need to put 93 in it. Do you agree with him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No? Your dad's right. Let me explain. The octane rating is how long the explosion lasts. And I'll give you a real simple idea. Regular. One molecule ignites 100, and 100 ignite 1,000. Okay? That's regular gasoline. So the explosion is it's big, but it's short. I'm going to go to the other extreme, your 93. One molecule ignites 2, 2 ignites 4, 4 ignites 6, 6 ignites 8. So the burn is slower. The explosion takes longer. We're talking a millionth of a second here. and you've got a car that has a knock sensor in probably both sides of the motor. You've got a car that's a computer that can handle that faster than we can even hear it. So I agree with your dad. I am of the opinion, with the exception of the supercharged Camaro we have and this Corvette that we have, we run premium in those because I'm too scared that there might be somebody who's not really authorized and schooled by Mark Salem that drives one of these cars and gets it into an RPM range that it ain't never been before and pops the motor. So if you don't have that, you don't have any 16-year-old kids going to drive this, I'm with your dad. Buy the cheapest gas you can find. And the computer will adapt. So if the computer sees pinging, it'll retard the timing a half a degree and go, is the pinging gone? No, I need to go another half. Yeah. Okay, how's that? Yep, no pinging. Okay, thank you. In the blink of an eye, all that happens. So let me ask you a question. This has had to have been altered to want 93 octane, right? Is there a new emission sticker on there, or is this a factory kind of vehicle?
This is factory vehicle. It's a Cadillac Escalade.
Okay, and it says 93 octane. You know, I'm with your dad. I would I would bet my last dollar. That's to create the perception that this is a very special, high-powered vehicle. When in reality, you're gonna lose to. There's quite a few imports that are gonna that are gonna out-accelerate that thing. But nevertheless, I'm with your dad. I think your dad gave you great advice.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Dick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever called anybody, but I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I have a 2008 Smart car.
Okay.
And months ago, you said when you come to a stop to not put the transmission into neutral, but just to leave it in the drive and don't do anything. Now, this little car has a hill holder.
Mm-hmm.
Does that apply also to when there's a hill holder and you come to a stop and it's just kind of chomping at the bit to get going and still just never just leave it and drive all the time? Is that what you would suggest?
And in your Smart car, you have the option of the hill holder or not the hill holder, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think the hill holder always is there when I come to a stop. I've had the thing for 13 years, 14.
Okay, all right. I'm going to believe you. The hill holder is. Aren't we just applying the brakes while you're at a traffic light?
Oh yeah, I have put my brakes. If I just push it into neutral, which I've done for most of the time I've had this car, many years, and then you know it's fine. I can take my foot off the brake, but of course you have to put on the brake if it's. When you come to a stop because of that hill holder. Now, that's an interesting thing. I can go through the middle menu. I don't think there's any way I'll go on and off in the hill holder.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'll tell you what. Let's talk about... Mark, how many times do you spend money fixing people's car because they're constantly moving the shifter or the process that they use to drive the car necessitates... twice the movement of the shifter and the related linkage and the movement of the transmission in and out of a drive gear, and the answer is zero. Are you bothered by the fact that we're going to start shifting this to neutral and out back and forth at every traffic light? No. Is there something that could happen? You might have a leak at the transmission shift lever someday because you're using it a little bit more than everybody else is, but that's a pretty cheap repair. So I'm not real worried about that, but do look at your manual to see if there's a way to defeat the hill holder.
Defeat the hill holder. That's an interesting thing. I'll do that. In the meantime, I've gone the first 110 approximately 1,000 miles on this car with generally putting it into neutral, but I'll look in the owner's manual and see. Otherwise, it's not... It's just that sort of, you know, chomping at the bit where you have to have your foot on the brake. You come to and everything is level here in the valley, so you come to a stoplight or something and just put it into neutral and take your foot off the brake and light turns and you put it into drive and drive off. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, and you know what? I would really like it if you'd let me know what you find out. So my email address is easy, Mark with a K at MarkSalem, like the cigarette, .com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. I'd like to know what you find out, please.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll look in the owner's. Would this be even in the owner's? I'll look and see, and if I find something, I'll let you know.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Okie dokie. 45 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, so we're 15 minutes from the end of the show, and the lines are wide open, all five of them. And if you have a car question and you've been thinking about calling in, now's the time, because like I said, Gil's all locked and loaded, so he's going to take five callers, and we're going to do the best we can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you go to MarkSalem.com, which is my website, you'll find a link there that says the best car repair shops, according to Mark. These are guys I know. These are guys that fix cars. They don't sell you stuff you don't need. They don't have super specials. They don't have people that put pressure on you to do this kind of stuff, and they don't have fancy oil additives and all that stuff. These guys are the best of shops in the valley as far as I'm concerned. That's MarkSalem.com. Click on the best car repair shops. Let me tell you about a couple of them. Larry Harker's Auto, good guy. 38th Avenue Indian School, been around the block. Auto Dynamics, in my opinion, when somebody calls me from the Sun City area, Surprise area, give me the name of a shop, I tell them Auto Dynamics. Been around since 1982. They know the difference between right and wrong. Chuck doesn't pay his technicians a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. That way he can make sure they don't sell unnecessary parts and repair. So Sun City, they're on Grand Avenue just west of 99th Avenue. The north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. That's Auto Dynamics. Then we got Tom Blackwell. Doggone it, he's been a friend of mine since Jesus was a baby. The both of us have grown up together. He's at 40th Street in Greenway. He's really good. He has ASC certified technicians, and you just got to meet him to understand that him and I are a lot alike. We're pretty principled. We know the difference between right and wrong, although our individual wives would suggest that we don't always follow our own advice. Blackwell does your family car, and he does your hot rod, and he does your vintage cars. So he's pretty well-rounded at 40th Street and Greenway, Blackwell Automotive. And let's go to the phones. Who we got, Gil?
Say good morning to Scott.
Scott, good morning.
Hey, good morning. If I've got a bunch of, I've got a 2015 F-250, 230,000 miles, getting the oxygen sensor, the pre-catalytic converter, oxygen sensor, codes, the T2198, those types of things. Are there any things, am I having to replace the catalytic converter, or are there things to wash out that catalytic converter, or that kind of mileage, am I just ready for a catalytic converter?
No. It's an O2 sensor code, and it's just saying that I'm getting a reading I don't like. Well, an O2 sensor code is going to be one of three numbers, low, middle, and high. All this is pretty easy to diagnose, although it's going to be expensive because you got to know what you're doing. We're going to plug into the computer, and we're going to say, talk to us. And the computer's going to give us a bunch of numbers, and we're going to go, oh, okay, well, it's a lean code. And then I'm going to make it run rich and see if the computer sees that the oxygen sensor goes from lean, hey, no fuel, to, holy mackerel, you just turned on a thunderstorm. Well, I did turn on a thunderstorm. What are you saying? I'm not seeing it. Oh, then you're defective. So at that point, you replace the O2 sensor after you test its ability to see the range of low and high. If it's stuck low, it's bad. If it's stuck high, it's bad. It has to see the range, and you have to be smart enough to create the range. This isn't any... And the answer to your question is that would be a very foolish move to go start replacing catalytic converters because you have an O2 sensor code. The O2 sensor is suggesting that this is one of the symptoms of a bad catalytic converter, but here's the primary one. I lost power, and I smell rotten eggs. And if you haven't lost power and you're not smelling rotten eggs, don't go have your catalytic converter changed. So it's
gotcha. Are there shops to check those? Because I'm always worried that it's going to be $500 just to test it, or they're going to come back and say, oh, you need $2,000 worth of you know, fixes and all of that. Is there good shops up in North Scottsdale, Cave Creek area?
Yeah, Blackwell, 40th Street and Greenway. I mean, he knows his way around the cars. Here's the procedure. We're going to go in and let's hypothetically say that we have an O2 sensor code. So there's probably four on your car. There's a pre and a post cat on both sides. So he's going to go in there and he's going to look at that, and he's going to create a lean condition and he wants to see one, and he's going to create a rich condition and he wants to see five. He's going to watch all of them. He sees one that doesn't move. He sees one that when it's rich, it should say five and it doesn't say five. So it's an O2 sensor. So he's going to say to you, okay, here's your checkout charge. Here's the take out the oxygen sensor and put it in, and here's the oxygen sensor called. I don't know if your cat's good, but you don't have any of the rest of the symptoms. You don't have low power. You don't have discoloration on the shell of the catalytic converter showing that it's been run really hot. I see nothing else, plus I've driven it, and there is no exhaust restriction. So I want to put an O2 sensor in it. I want to clear the code. I want you to move on. And if you have any other check engine lights, come back. That's how it works. So, no, you're jumping way ahead.
Nothing to be scared of.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, Blackwell Automotive up there at Greenway and 40th Street. He's a good guy. And if you tell him that you have naked pictures of Mark Salem, he'll give you a deduction on your car repair. But you better be able to come up with some pictures because he hates it when I say that. Real quick, I know we have another caller. Thompson's Auto Repairs in Mesa. There's only one shop in Mesa that I could find that could pass the Mark Salem filter. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair. They come from families that were in auto repair and in the gas station business in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So when you look at Brian and Thelma, his wife's history, both of their families came from the gas station. These kids have more experience than I have. So the idea is if you're in Mesa, unfortunately, Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street east of Stapley, but it's the only shop in Mesa that can really pass the filter that Mark Salem has created for all of his best car repair shop guys. Okay, who's next?
The next caller is Mike.
Mike, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
I have a 2019 Ford Ranger, 2 years old, under warranty still, and I did an update on the sync system, and ever since I've done the update, I get this message all the time that says, power off to save battery.
It says what?
It says power off to save battery. So it turns the radio off when you close the door, and then I get the message on my phone that remote start is disabled.
Yeah.
The sync system. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, they're just keeping track of you. They're knowing how many miles you ride on your car and what your throttle's like. They know that when your 18-year-old son took it to prom night before last that he did 67 into 25 and all that other kind of stuff. And they're going to be able to sell you everything, and nobody knows you need it. But based on historical data, this is what most people would need under these circumstances. See, right now we're starving to death because everything used to be a 3,000-mile call. I got to visit with you every 3,000 miles, and I got to sell the hell out of everything on your car. Today, your oil changes are 10 and 15,000 miles apart. I've lost so much business. So now I'm going to start monitoring how you drive, and I'm going to develop algorithms, and I'm going to tell you that I need to flush your fuel injectors because there are signs that there's a problem, and let's go ahead and nip it in the bud. How much is it? $399. Okay. Gosh, do I love those kinds of conversations. So,
sure.
It's up to you. I am against, I don't let Dodge manage my cars. I don't let Chevrolet. I don't own any Fords. And I don't do that. I'll manage my own cars, but to have somebody constantly sending me, you know, and I know, now you wadded up my panties, something fierce here. I signed up the other day for some stupid website, and now all of a sudden they've decided that they know me better than anybody else, and they want to be able to send me down and have somebody look at my heart to see if it's okay. All I got to do is ask my wife. She knows I don't have a heart. So I'm done. So I want to caution you, because the data that comes from your computer can be misrepresented in at least 5 to 10 different ways. And everybody has their own way of disseminating and describing that information, and it's all self-serving. So that's my opinion.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Good luck to you. All righty. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address, and we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Tim.
Tim, good morning.
Well, good morning, sir. Love your show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Question about oil viscosity.
Okay.
I purchased a Mazda 6, a 2014 model, about a year ago, and the company recommends 0-20 oil for North America and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in the owner's manual, they recommend 5-30 for Mexico. And I feel like our climate's more like Mexico than most of North America. I'm a little concerned that, I mean, the fuel mileage is great. It doesn't burn a lot of oil. I mean, I don't replace oil between oil changes. But I'm concerned that viscosity, thin viscosity means better fuel economy, but I'm concerned about longevity.
Okay, perfect, perfect. I got this. Put your hands together like you're praying to your wife before she hits you in the head with a shovel. Rub your hands hard, push them together, and rub them as hard and as fast as you can. Okay? That's your motor.
I am.
Yep. I want to know, do you want water to go in between those two pieces of metal that have the thickness of a human hair between them? You want to use water to lubricate that joint, or you want to use peanut butter?
Let's see. That's, I'll get some water.
Yeah. So
2 minutes.
Stick with 0-20. 0-20 flows at 50 below zero, and 0-20 protects your engine up to 500 degrees. But I want to tell you something. At 260 to 280, your engine is toast. So even the oil will outlast your engine. So, and when you have an engine that you have what I'm affectionately calling sewing machine oil, the 0-20, it the motor works better, the heat dissipation is better, the lubrication is better, no matter what the temperature, the ambient temperature is. 0-20 is the way of the world, and I'll make you feel good. I have a 1-ton Dodge. It is a monster. We own a diesel conversion, a diesel performance division, and I have everything we sell. And my truck will just stand up on its back four tires and have the bumper in the air. I use 0-20 in it. I use 0-20 in my tractors. I use 0-20 in my semis that I haul my equipment around and my horses around. I use 0-20 in my wife's car. I use 0-20 in all the rental cars. It's the best oil out there, and it's backward compatible. And so I don't want you to be afraid of the 0-20, and I can't explain why Mexico has a 530. I can't explain that. But it flows like a zero weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot, and we now know we don't need it to flow like a 40 weight, a 50 weight, a 60 weight, a 70 weight. We don't want that. So this is the way of the future, but I hope I put you in a better zone. 0-20 is the applicable oil. And everything I own, we have 27 vehicles in our family, and everything has 0-20 in it. Even the backward-compatible hot rod cars we have, they have 0-20. So,
well, that's all I need to hear.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. My email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Thank you, Gil, for getting me through this hour. Thank you for calling us in. We had 13 callers.